Hey, everybody. I am C.
I'm Jen.
And you're listening to Tom, Tit, and Baobab.
Welcome back to Tom, Tit, and Baobab, the New York Times Spelling Bee-inspired podcast that's all about words, word games, and the word nerds who love them. See, I had a dream the other night that we weren't funny anymore, and we had to refer people back to old episodes of the show to prove that we were funny. We were like, go back and listen to this one. We were really hilarious.
Sorry to say, Jen, maybe we're not actually all that funny. I think we just amuse ourselves.
So you're saying I'm living my nightmare?
Possible. But no one ever said the bee had to be funny. I mean, look at Sam. He's not funny.
That's a good question. Is Sam funny?
No, it's not a question. I just said he's not funny. Sam's not funny. What's funny about Sam?
I think Sam thinks Sam's funny.
What has he ever done to be funny?
Like when he posts never say never about an S online, I think he thinks that's funny.
Funny, evil, genius-y? I don't know. You know, I don't actually read social media or follow him, so I don't know.
Don't you think that the bee tie he thinks is
bee
funny?
Bee tie? I think he thinks it's like weird hipster, because, you know, bee ties are hipster.
What? You don't know what you're talking about. I don't know that I would argue that Sam is actually funny, but I would, and I am arguing that I think Sam thinks Sam is funny.
Anyway, we don't have to be funny because words are funny all by themselves.
Okay, give me an example.
For example, tantara.
You're right. That made me laugh.
If not funny, at least fun.
Fun and funny. All right. Let me think. I know some funny words like
Lulu's kind of funny.
Pretty funny. What's funnier than either of those? Flibbertigibbet.
Flibbertigibbet's not a real word, so
it
that
is
doesn't
too
count.
A real word.
Flippy floppy.
No, flibbertigibbet is a real word. Frippery.
Frippery.
Yeah.
Sure. Stripey.
Stripey's kind of funny.
Yeah, I thought so.
Actually, it's not.
What? Stripey?
So persnickety is.
What? Persnickety is a good word. I like that.
What do you think about buttocks and booty?
Buttocks. But. She said butt.
Would you ever? I can't imagine ever like saying buttocks in a sentence and not cracking up
buttocks.
Laughing.
Yo, buttocks.
I actually read a thing about funny words that said that most of the words people find the funniest are associated with body parts and bodily functions, like puking.
And that's because people are juvenile.
Hey, juvenile was a pangram this week.
I know, and I used it because it's time for The Week in Bees.
This is the part of the show where we talk about bees from the previous week. Today, we're starting with Saturday, October 28th, and ending with Friday, November 3rd. See, let's see how juvenile you are. What's a funnier word, puke or pawpaw?
Pawpaw is a pretty funny word. Don't you like it? Or do you like papaw better than pawpaw?
Well, I like neither of those
words. You like
words.
Not pawpaw or pawpaw?
I like pawpaw bears. Does that count?
All right, so this is from Monday, October 30th, where both of those words were in the puzzle, as they have been in the past.
P-A-W.
Yes, or P-A-P-A-W.
Yeah.
And this is referring to...
I thought it was the same thing as
papaya. Fruit. Is a pawpaw fruit the same thing as a papaya?
Yeah. I mean, if it were its own fruit, I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Wait, what do you mean if it was its own fruit?
If it was like an actual fruit, separate from the papaya. But it's just another term for a papaya. And I think it's silly that it's included in all of its spellings.
Wait a minute. Stop for a second because you're about to tell lots of fake things.
Fake things?
You really
I'm looking in the dictionary. Merriam-Webster says the meaning of pawpaw is papaya.
Hold on. I think I know what the difference is, though I can't see. Where are papayas native to? Hold on. Yes. Awesome. Okay. So, Jen, you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
From Food and Wine, July 24th, 2019, what is a pawpaw and why is this fruit so magical?
Uh-huh.
Pawpaw fruit tastes like a cross between a banana and a mango, but surprise, it comes mostly from Pennsylvania.
Wait, what? Okay.
So papayas come from Central America. This, the pawpaw, seems to come from North America, especially in Pennsylvania.
Okay, I am going to need...
weird?
Yeah, this is very weird because in both Merriam-Webster and Collins dictionaries, the very first definition of pawpaw is papaya, just straight up papaya. And then it's a tree of the custard apple family growing in the central and southern U.S. and having an oblong yellowish edible fruit with many seeds.
I hear you, but I think that's the difference. So papaya has orange to red flesh and is narrower than pawpaw or papaw. Though pawpaw and papaw are definitely the same thing. Pawpaw flesh is yellow and they're generally larger than a papaya. Both are ready to eat when the skin is yellow and slightly soft to the touch.
Well,
So for many food things online, and Food and Wine is like a real magazine, they are not the same thing. They're different varieties. They are similar-ish.
I believe
but
they
that.
They're
not the same.
But that leads me to believe that once again, we have found a problem with the dictionary.
There you go. So once again, thank us, Merriam-Webster.
Yeah, we should have a direct line. We should be able to call them all hours of the day or night. All right,
yes.
Let's talk about a different food word this week, which there is a definitive answer to.
Yes.
That is fettuccine.
Oh, what's the definitive answer about that? About how to spell that ridiculous word?
Yes. Fettuccine, which appeared on Saturday, October 28th.
It didn't just appear. It was the pangram.
It was the pangram. Did you spell it correctly the first time?
You know I did not. You know I did not spell it correctly once I knew it was the word and looked for it 4,000 times, knew all the alternate spellings, and still kept screwing it up. Yes.
Yeah, same here. I kept trying to put it in. I put in all the different spellings, and I finally had to look in the dictionary to find the spelling that was accepted in the puzzle.
That spelling is F-E-T-T-U-C-C-I-N-E, fettuccine.
Correct. And people, including Cecilia and I, were all enraged about this. We wanted
enraged.
To know why all the variant spellings didn't count. So I decided to find out why. And the reason, it turns out, is actually quite reasonable.
The reason is quite reasonable?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's an Italian word, and the Italian is spelled F-E-T-T-U-C-C-I-N-E, which is what the pangram was. And it is a plural word.
Right.
The singular is fettuccine with the letter A at the end. That's the singular, and it's a pasta in the shape of a long ribbon is what it actually means.
Narrow ribbon is what I see.
I see
okay.
Long ribbon or a slice. The plural in Italian of A is E, spelled E. It's pronounced basically A, fettuccine. So that actually is the correct way to spell it. And if you spell it with an I, you're misunderstanding that the E is already a plural.
Why are you saying any of these things? The spelling in Italian would have nothing to do with how we spell it in English and the spellings that are accepted in the dictionary, of which there are four in Merriam-Webster, which are considered exactly the same. And the point is, all four should have been included if all four are the same word.
Because it's an Italian food. It comes from Italy.
That doesn't matter.
That's why I'm saying that.
We have lots of things that are different words.
Yeah, but you know what? We complain all the time about Sam and his alternate spellings being ridiculous. And so you're right. If Sam were to be consistent, he would have included all of the alternate spellings.
In a week where you had pawpaw and pawpaw, you should have fettuccine and fettuccine.
My belief is that you should have the main spelling and that's it.
That's fine, but that's not what he does, ever. So why in this case was it one fettuccine?
I don't know, but fettuccine with an E is the correct spelling.
Unless you look at various dictionaries where it's spelled all sorts of different ways. I mean, we don't count gelati.
No, we don't.
Right, because that's Italian.
That's your point.
In English, it's gelato.
But gelato is also Italian with an O.
Yes. It's also gelati in Italian.
Yeah, in plural.
English, we call gelato because that is the English thing that we now consider
Italian ice cream. And we also say panini as a singular when panini is actually the singular is panino.
Right. But in English, there's no panino. There's panini. And that's it. So fettuccine.
Okay, well, if you were to open up an Italian restaurant, you would be best to spell it the Italian way.
And maybe use Italian words, not English
words. Can we agree on that?
It's the most ridiculous conversation ever. I wanted to go from pawpaw to another ridiculous plant that I was supposed to know. So if we can already say that pawpaw is kind of, since it's not papaya, is kind of a obscure Pennsylvania fruit. How about Daphne? Why should I know Daphne?
Daphne?
Besides that it's been here before.
I like Daphne.
That's fine. You can like it all you want. I don't think it's a plant that you would generally know.
That is true.
That makes no sense to me.
Yes. The reason I knew it was in the puzzle is because I know it's in the puzzle.
Right.
So I agree with you this
Thank
time.
Thank you. Okay.
But I like the word Daphne because of Bernini's statue of Apollo and Daphne, which is one of my favorites.
And
I sent you to see it while you were in Rome last year.
It was
and
great.
Was it not
yes,
fabulous?
That's not a good reason for Daphne to be a word. That is not why Daphne is a word. Again, an Italian statue. What Daphne is. Daphne
I just want to go to
Italy. Sort of
Let's
little,
just stop and go to Italy.
Exactly. Daphne is some sort of little flower plant, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But I think it's named after Daphne, the mythological figure that is in the statue.
Are you making that up?
No, I think that's true.
All right. Daphne is a small Eurasian shrub with sweet scented flowers and typically evergreen leaves. Daphne is also a nymph in Greek mythology, but that's capitalized.
Yes.
I was gawping at the mention of Daphne. What do you think about that?
Do you know what gawp is?
Oh, I assume it was like, wah, gawp. I think it's the thing that your face makes when you're like, what? That's crazy. Is that not what it is?
It is. Wait, I thought it was something
you
different.
Gawp. Gawp makes me
I
so happy.
I looked it up and it said something crazy and I was like, what? And I must have been looking at the wrong word.
Oh my God.
Okay. Are you gawping right now?
I'm kind of like scowling right now.
I feel like you've been scowling at me since the moment we started. And
yes.
You seem given to volatility today.
Oh, you like the word volatility.
I do like the word volatility.
Vitality. Totality.
I liked a lot of words that day. Yes. Those were all good itty words.
Really?
Yeah. Don't you like them? Because they make the words sound more sophisticated than they actually are.
That's funny. I think my problem with that, I mean, I think I got queen that day, but you're always just like, oh, what stupid ending did I forget? Anytime it's like, what stupid ending did I forget? I just get annoyed. That's all. Mm-hmm. I just like when we have to find different words when it's not all endings we're trying to find for the same set of words. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. And I also like when you don't have to find the same exact words. So there were 2 days this week when there were a whole bunch of repeat words. So Tuesday and I think Thursday, aioli, iota, atoll, the same exact words 2 days apart.
Yeah.
That makes you
yeah.
feel like you're doing the same puzzle. I think that was bad curation.
I hear you.
And then leaving out the same words, like lotta was left out both of those days.
Which I'm actually fine with because I think that's a stupid word. What's your problem with?
I agree. I'm fine with it too. Except that on Monday, you got wanna.
Yeah. Which
we already had
to know.
So, I mean, if you're going to have to know
yeah.
and wanna,
yeah.
you might as well let me have lotta.
Can I wanna move on? Can we do that?
Yes, we gotta.
Wanna, gotta, better move
better?
On to.
That's not in there.
It should be. The word of the week. This is the part of the show where we take a closer look at one word from the previous week's puzzles. Last week was a spooky dive into the world of horror. Are we going lighter this week, Jen?
We most certainly are, see.
Oh, good.
This word made an appearance on Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. It also makes an appearance in the lyrics of the 1982 song, Don't You Want Me?
Ooh.
And the title of a 1988 movie starring Tom Cruise.
Hmm?
Do you know the word?
Do not.
Okay. Do you know the song, Don't You Want Me?
Don't you want me, baby? Do, 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 do.
Okay,
don't you want me? Oh.
And how does it start?
I was working in
you were working as a waitress in a
cocktail bar.
Cocktail,
did we already do cocktail?
No.
Am I nuts?
So we have talked
about
cocktails in the past. We talked about Manhattan because you did a deep dive on Manhattan. But I thought it would be fun to take a step back and look at cocktail.
Oh, okay.
As the word.
Okay.
So you know what a cocktail is.
No, I have no idea. What is it, Jen?
The primary definition of cocktail today is a noun, which according to Merriam-Webster is, quote, a usually iced drink of wine or distilled liquor mixed with flavoring ingredients.
Okay.
Such as a Manhattan. Now, the OED notes that cocktail, in this sense of being a drink, originally referred to a particular type of alcoholic drink, which consisted of a spirit mixed with bitters, water, and sugar. So those were like the four components of a cocktail.
Okay.
And in fact, on May 13th, 1806, the editor of the Balance and Columbian Repository, gave what is the earliest known definition in print of cocktail. He wrote, "Cocktail is a stimulating liquor composed of spirits of any kind, sugar, water, and bitters. It is vulgarly called a bittered sling and is supposed to be an excellent electioneering potion, inasmuch as it renders the heart stout and bold at the same time that it fuddles the head." I thought that was really interesting that it was connected to electioneering.
Fuddles the head. Fuddle's a funny word too. Fuddle.
Fuddle is a funny word. It's like puddle and muddle and fuddle. Anyway, I thought since we're on the verge of an election, I needed to get that in there and tell people not to drink cocktails before they go to vote on Tuesday.
Oh, you can totally drink cocktails before you go.
Except it will fuddle your head, and this is serious. Elections are a serious matter these days. Anyway, so they were this specific thing, and by the mid-19th century, they became generalized to mean like any drink with a combination of ingredients. And then in the late 19th century is when you start to give specific names to those specific drinks, like the Manhattan, martini, mojito, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Around the turn of the 20th century, that mixed drink sense expanded to a couple of other meanings. So there was a metaphorical meaning, which was a mixture or combination of factors or elements. So there is a sentence from The New Yorker, "The worldwide Y2K hysteria, a nutty cocktail of digital overthink and Luddite millennialism."
Hmm.
Culinary, shrimp cocktail, fruit cocktail, that came about. Mm. And then chemical, any mixture of liquids, especially one which is in some way either harmful, like a Molotov cocktail,
right,
or medicinal. So a quote from a Yale magazine in 1901, "It is an interesting work," he said modestly, as he mixed himself a cocktail of laudanum and cocaine.
Laudanum and cocaine. Nice.
Yeah, that sounds like a terrible cocktail. Do not take that before you go to vote on Tuesday.
Well, again, you can do what you need to do.
So that's where cocktail went linguistically. But where did cocktail come from in the first place? Like, how did it become associated with mixed drinks?
I do not know.
Well, there are many different theories for this.
Okay.
And I'm drawing now on differdsguide.com, angelsenvy.com, and themixer.com. Here are some of the theories. English sailors in Mexico borrowed the name when they saw people in taverns stirring their drinks with the root of cola de gallo, which literally translates to cock's tail. Theory number
de
one.
De gallo? Wouldn't that mean of chicken? Of rooster?
Of a rooster. Yeah, a cock.
Yeah,
it's a rooster.
Okay.
A second theory, and this is there are many, many theories. This is just a smattering of them. In old taverns, the spigot on a barrel was called a cock, and the dregs of the barrels were called tailings. The dregs were mixed together and sold cheaply as a drink. They were cock tailings, hence cocktails.
Mm.
Third theory. Some people trace the word to the French word for egg cup, which is coquetier, and say that the phrase originated in New Orleans, where the apothecary Antoine Peychaud became known for serving a mixture of brandy, absinthe, bitters, and sugar, known as a Sazerac, which people still drink today, in an egg cup.
Mm.
Okay. However, the prevailing theory actually has to do with horses.
Okay.
Do you know anything about cocktails and horses?
Not at all, for sure.
Are you sure? Are you
I'm
really,
sure.
really sure?
That I do not know.
According to the OED, cocktail was first used as an adjective around 1750, and it designated, quote, "a horse with a docked tail which sticks up." In other words, a tail that cocks up. These horses with docked tails were, for the most part, not thoroughbred horses. So then you get cocktail describing a racehorse, quote, "of mixed or inferior breed." And that use was then extended to mean characterized by a lack of gentility or good breeding, lacking social propriety. So you could call someone cocktail.
Ah,
you could be like, "You're so rude and cocktail."
It's kind of like saying they're cock, but cocktail.
Kind of.
Okay, cool.
Well, you'd be saying they were like one of these horses.
Gotcha.
So what's the connection here? The OED conjectures that this usage probably arose because, quote, a mixed drink, especially one in which a spirit was diluted with other ingredients, was not a thoroughbred or of good breeding or otherwise lacked social propriety. So mixed breed, mixed drink. Alternatively, David Wondrich, who is an expert on spirits and wrote a book called Imbibe, exclamation point, puts this forward as the connection. There were sneaky horse traders that would try to make their horses more marketable by inserting ginger into the horse's anus. This is not a quote, by the way, causing the horse to perk up and the tail to cock up. And that would make them appear full of spirit and energy. So they were more appealing to the buyer. This is also one of the theories of the etymology behind ginned up. So you know how I kept saying I wanted to do ginned up? As a thing, people say it's right. From the same thing. And both of these sound like animal abuse to me.
Right, a little bit.
Now, people also used to add ginger and other spices to a drink, to an alcoholic drink, right, to have a similar effect on the drinker as a stimulant.
Right.
Later, bitters and other kinds of flavorings took the place of those spices. And voila, to use a word from the spelling bee.
Right.
You have a cocktail.
Nice. Very nice.
So next time you're sipping your Manhattan, you can think about where to stick your ginger.
Excellent. Good work, Jen. I like that one. I have to actually tell you a quick story. At Halloween, we were talking about horror movies, and then I got to like throw out my horror knowledge from this deep dive. And now I'm thinking the next time I'm drinking, I'm going to throw out my cocktail knowledge. So thank you very much.
Yes. The next time you're at a cocktail party or at a cocktail
bar. Or just
bar
drinking my cocktails.
Cocktail
or cocktailing.
Yeah,
the next time I'm cocktailing.
Exactly.
Nice.
You know, it was really interesting. As I was looking this up, I was like, we put cocktail before so many words. Cocktail napkins, cocktail rings. It's used in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, all having to do with cocktails. But we must really like cocktails in this country.
Of course we do. You know what else people really like?
What's that?
They like unbelievable words. Unbelievable words is a short, fast segment where we exchange vocabulary we've recently discovered or rediscovered.
Really, it's just an excuse to talk about words that we've come across that we really like for one reason or another that aren't from the bee. See, do you have a word this week?
I do have a word this week. My word is Mergenser.
What?
Mergenser. Mergenser. Okay, so Mergenser is a word I got to from Weezer, Weaser. Weezer is a word I got to from TypeShift, like I get all my words. Mm-hmm. So I look up Weezer and it says the common Mergenser. And I say, that is a definition I understand not at all. I look up the common Mergenser, and the common Mergenser is a duck. It's a type of duck, and it is slightly different, kind of like a pawpaw and a papaya. They are large, long-bodied ducks with thin, pointed wings. Their bills are straight and narrow, unlike the wide, flat bill of a, quote, typical duck. And the females have shaggy crests on the back of their head.
So I'm looking at a picture.
Females, yeah, it looks super cool. But then the other thing to see are the hooded Mergensers who have mohawks and are so cool.
Wait, I'm looking it up right now.
The hooded Mergenser, check it out.
They're amazing. Yeah.
Aren't they?
This one looks like it has a round head. Everybody, you have to look this up. Mergenser.
Yeah,
I don't even want to share my word now because it's not as good as this. God. I could look at these all day long.
Aren't they
cute? Amazing.
Seriously.
I'll post one online. Wow. Awesome. My word's going to be so anticlimactic. The word is not anticlimactic, but it will be anticlimactic. My word is bailiwick.
Oh, like a ballywick?
Yes, but did you know it's pronounced bailiwick?
No, I thought it was a ballywick.
So did I, because I've only ever read that word. I've never actually said it. And if
I
you do need
word.
To say it, you should say bailiwick.
Say the two words against each other again.
Ballywick is not the pronunciation. Bailiwick is the pronunciation. So it's a long A, like bay, and the stress is on the bay. And instead of leewick, it's lewick. Bailiwick.
Bailiwick, but I like saying Bailiwick. I can't say that.
Okay. Right.
All right.
You know
I
what
got
a
it.
Bailiwick is?
Yeah, it's like your stuff. It's my bailiwick, like my the stuff I know about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It totally is. I didn't know that.
Oh.
I mean, I am sure that I have read it in context.
Right.
And
that's
understood
why you know
it.
The word.
Right. But if you had asked me to give you a definition, I probably couldn't have. I don't think I could have. Anyway, it started with law enforcement, the office or jurisdiction of a bailiff. But here's the interesting thing. Only a British bailiff, which is a person employed by a British sheriff to serve writs and make arrests and executions. So not bailiff in the court sense that we know it. So somebody mm-hmm. that has jurisdiction over a certain area, and that is the sphere in which one has superior knowledge or authority, a special domain. So a sample sentence, I am hopeless in the sciences, but 19th century literature is my bailiwick.
Perfect. I like it. Good word.
And guess what? Hooded Mergansers. What's the word?
Mergansers.
Mergansers. Soon, hooded Mergansers are going to be my
your bailiwick. You know what my bailiwick is?
Oh, I think I know.
Being wild. It's the wild card.
In the wild card, we get crazy and do whatever we want.
Well, then, let's get really nuts today, Jen, and talk about work.
See, I know you're old, but maybe you need to get out a little bit more.
Pot, meat, kettle.
Yeah, that's true.
But seriously, you sent me two very interesting articles this week, both about new words, technology, and generation gaps.
I did. And one was from the New York Times called What is Ijbol? I think I said that right. Ijbol, all capitals.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually got that sent to me from a few people, and I immediately understood what Ijbol was. Did you?
No. Yeah. How?
Well, I was thinking it's me. I just burst out laughing. That's totally me.
You just magically knew what the letter stood for?
In the New York Times article, it's capitalized. So I knew it was an acronym and I got what it was pretty quick. Oh, yeah.
That's really interesting. I did not, but I like it.
So explain what was in the article, Jen.
The article was about Ijbol, I-J-B-O-L, which is an internet acronym that stands for I just burst out laughing. And for Gen Z, which is after millennials, it has replaced other acronyms that are used to indicate laughing. Like we would say LOL, ROFL, or LMAO. So those acronyms are now considered to be old people words. And apparently it was inspired in some way by Kamala Harris.
Well, and K-pop. It started in K-pop
and
forms,
K-pop.
But Kamala Harris apparently burst out laughing a lot, like me, so I'm down with it.
But they said if Kamala Harris, if her social media team ever used the word Ijbol, it would be over.
Right, right, right. But now the other article you sent was from The Verge, and it was called The Tragically mm-hmm. Millennial Vocabulary of the Sam Bankman-Fried Trial.
Yes. This article was by a millennial, and it looked at the transcripts from the Bankman-Fried Trial and pointed out that the words thing and stuff were used in almost every sentence, not only of the trial, but of all the documentation that they showed in court, work memos. It was like,
and not just like thing and stuff, like a lot of just like really casual, like an oof and yeah, yeah.
this was my favorite part. And when they told Caroline Ellison, the whole thing was falling apart and like they were found out, basically it was like, you're going to go to jail now. All she sent back was a sad face emoji.
Yeah. So both of these articles are interesting, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the common point in both, which is how do we talk at work? And maybe more importantly, how should we talk at work?
Mm-hmm.
And I really got to this from a line in the Ijbol article, which said, quote, you would totally use LOL with your boss. I will say that I have used LMAO with my boss, but like that's as far as I escalate.
That was all. Let's tell listeners that was all a quote.
Yeah.
You personally were not saying that you used LMAO with your boss.
And, and obviously the Sam Bankman Fried trial was all like things that these people said to each other at work. And being an old person with an idea of how things should work, I immediately think, hey, people, write more formally at work. But then I thought, well, is it bad if they are, you know, we're definitely in my workplace a little bit. Well, we have a chat area. And in this chat area, which all the bosses are into, and I guess me as somewhat of a boss, people say all sorts of things. And often I'm thinking like, oh, people were at work. Maybe don't say. Now, that said, I have some people who are young, probably millennials. I don't think we have any Gen Z anymore in my workplace. And I work in a place that is mostly women and people seem to be pretty clean, you know, family people.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's nothing crazy. But I still think like this weird informal written stuff really gets me. But then again, everybody's at home, right? I work for a place that almost everybody is still remote.
Yeah.
So what do you think? You work mostly remote too.
I do. And the people that I work with for the most part are people that I've worked with for a really long time. So I know them well. And we have a good relationship. So we talk about non-work things, but we still keep like a level of professionalism. And I'm even thinking about like I did another project a couple of years ago with a big team that had some young people on it, and we were on Slack and there were various channels. And even there, yes, there was a lot of emoji use, but I don't know. I feel like people still didn't call everything a thing or stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that just seems lazy. And then I wonder if that has something to do with the crypto world, right? So we should probably pull out some stuff from article,
some things,
to be a little clearer about what we're talking about.
In the memo that Ellison sent to the team,
Wait, nobody knows who Ellison is.
Caroline Ellison is, I don't know what her role was. She the C?
That she was the CEO of Alameda.
Okay. So one of the crypto arms.
Right.
So in this memo that was sent around, it said things like, and I just said things, but that's because I'm going to give an example of what that thing is. 80 million or 180 million lost to the China thing. Now, admittedly, in that particular case, she explained that she said thing because she didn't think it would be a good thing to write "we bribed them" in the memo. So fine. But if you look through the list, it's all like 150 lost to this thing.
Yeah.
50 million lost to that thing.
Well, she also writes later, and again, this is a business memo she writes for her boss, an action item reading, quote, "try to just push more on stuff generally, I guess." See, that to me seems more like lazy. I mean, the thing, I guess, if she's intentionally trying to obfuscate. Is that how you say that word? Obfuscate.
Obfuscate.
Yeah, I never say the word, but it was the right word.
Yeah, I couldn't even get it out of my mouth. That was the perfect word to use, obviously. Yeah,
but the stuff just seemed like I'm trying to be lazy. Like, okay, I've got action. My action is do stuff, make stuff happen. And this is like how my son talks, and it drives me crazy because you're not really being clear about what you're going to do. So it's easy just to say, I will do stuff. And then you're like, how? How are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? What's going to happen? Right.
I completely agree with that. As you're saying, it's very hard to hold people accountable when they say, I'm going to do things or I'm going to do stuff, because what is that thing and what is that stuff?
You'll probably do something.
Right. But what is it? You don't know. So accountability becomes an issue. The other thing that to me becomes an issue is documentation. If one of these people drop out of the picture, how is their replacement or anyone down the line in the future supposed to know what was going on or what they're responsible for or who did what? It just is bad documentation. And again, you're right. If they were trying to obfuscate, did I say it right that time?
That sounded right.
And did it on purpose, then they were just trying to. But like, come on, you don't document that you're bribing somebody. Like, why would you even put that down at all? I don't like that I just don't understand. Anyway.
So is this more of an issue? So you're saying that for you, it's not really an issue.
I'm saying
like more generally, and I'm not seeing it super generally, but I do wonder, I mean, I see my kids and I see how they write and their inability to do things formally unless really forced by an old person. Yeah. And then I see that their friends don't read the formal emails mm-hmm. that I make them send when something mm-hmm. needs to happen, right? Yeah. And, you know, the casual texts that kind of say something and don't pin you down to
That's
something.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, there's no accountability, but also like it's a new way of speaking, but it also seems like a new way of interacting that just seems lazy to
me. Well, I don't know if it's lazy so much as it's non-committal.
The other thing that was happening mm-hmm. in both of these articles we're talking about is it's also using language for a certain mm-hmm. purpose. And in the Each Bowl mm-hmm. article, they talk about how they wouldn't say Each Bowl to old people because that's mm-hmm. for your friends. In the Sam Bankman Fried, it's mm-hmm. they're documenting people saying, oof, we're using using things that you should be using for your friends at work. And I do wonder too, like there's this formality that our generation expects mm-hmm. at work that I feel like has really mm-hmm. gone down. And you know, it's not necessarily horrible, but on the other hand, it seems wrong to me.
I think it depends on what your industry is and what your workplace is like. So I'm not against it completely. But I think, for instance, at a school, I wouldn't want teachers texting with students and saying things like, oof, yup, yup.
Right.
And I wouldn't want students writing that back to teachers. If we were working at a nuclear power plant, I don't know. Some places were like, you need to take things seriously. I don't know that I would like that language.
You say this, but I was also thinking, I mean, it made me uncomfortable. Yeah. I mean, we now know this Sam Bankman-Fried seems like a crazy sleaze, mm-hmm. but like you have this young guy who's writing you inappropriate things. I mean, not mm-hmm. not as far as I know, not inappropriate in the way you usually mean inappropriate. But if that's how you interact mm-hmm. with somebody who has power over you or who you have power over, then later if you feel like somebody like crossed a line, how do you know when that is? If you always talk
true.
Like you're,
I mean,
you know,
10-year-old
friends. It seems
to lack a level of respect.
Right.
You know? But on the other hand, like you're exchanging that for camaraderie.
Should we be comrades with? I mean, this is what drives me crazy. Like, I get it. I get that, like, there used to be workplace mm-hmm. comedies and, like, it's nice to be friends with people you work with. It just annoys me because mm-hmm. it's what my job is trying to do, like get people to talk together. And like constantly I'm working and people are chatting about nonsense. And I'm like, you've just told everybody you have nothing to do and I'm working. So you're getting on my nerves. I don't know. Maybe I'm just fuddy daddy.
Fuddy daddy is a funny word.
It is a pretty funny word.
And you know what?
Full circle.
Full circle. And just to like wrap this up, I'm going to say I thought what was almost the most interesting thing about the Sam Bankman free trial article is, and I mentioned that the author identified as a millennial.
Right.
And the last line was, quote, as for you, Gen Z, don't laugh too hard. At some point, we're going to be hearing an important court case involving terms such as unalive, corn, or La Dollar Bean. It's only a matter of time. And I do not know what any of those things
mean. Exactly. That was awesome. I was like, I gotta wait for my kids to come home and ask them what that means.
Can you tell me after you ask? Because I really want to know.
I will.
There must be an entire population right now speaking a language that I don't understand any of.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes. Oh. And that's it for this episode of Tom Tit and Baobab.
Thanks for being with us. If you agree that words are amazing, come back next week. We drop a new episode of TMB every Monday.
Until then, be in touch. You can find us on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. You can also email us at tomtitandbaobab@gmail.com.
We want to know all about the bees you like, bees you hate, words you missed, and words you'd like to know about. And let us know how you feel about workplace oofs.
And if you're listening on Spotify, don't forget to answer the Q&A and take the poll.
If you like TNB and never want to miss an episode, subscribe or follow us.
Even better, leave a rating or review. This helps other word nerds and puzzle lovers find our very indie, very funny podcast.
Debatable. Bye, everybody.
Bye.